think the Magid Shir who gave this shir previously came from Lakewood every week, so I just came from a chasan in Lakewood to have the same experience. The topic of tonight's shir is halachic prenuptial agreement, specifically the prenuptial agreement of the Beis Din of America, which was drafted by Rabbi Willig in consultation with many gedolim about 23-24 years ago. The title of the series is Contemporary Topics in Eben Ezra. I didn't realize how contemporary this is when I gave you the title a few weeks ago. It was something that we do. And then about a week and a half ago, they publicized a new psak from Rav Sternbach attacking the RSA prenup as being halachically invalid. And then just today, I saw they posted on Kikar Shabbat, one of the Haredi blogs, Za'akas Gedola Yisrael, against the RCA prenup, signed by a few others. I guess this is a contemporary issue in Yanni Dioma. The objective of a halachically valid prenuptial agreement, which is also legally enforceable, is to create a system that would ensure the prompt issuance of a get upon the dissolution of a marriage in a way that is halachically valid and doesn't raise issues of isui, of coercion, in an illicit fashion, which was the topic of last week's shir. As you mentioned, the nusach of the prenuptial agreement that's been publicized by the Beis Din of America and the RCA, with the haskam of many other, Rosh Yeshiva and Wayu and others, was drafted by Rabbi Willig in the early 1990s, with the haskamas and the involvement of Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, Rav Chaim Simbalist of the Beis Din of Tel Aviv, which then got the haskama of Rav Avadia and others. So we'll discuss a little bit what the issues raised in these recent pieces have been, which are issues that were all discussed b'shaito, and why some of the contentions here may be based on misinformation or false assumptions. So before the Beis Din of America prenup, if you look in Shuvas Igros Moshe, Chelek, Dalet, Eben Ezra, Siman Kuf Zayin, Rav Moshe gives his endorsement in a 1980 tshuva to the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Far Rockaway. Rav Moshe gives his endorsement to a kind of prenuptial arbitration agreement whereby a couple agrees that in the event of a dispute related to end of marriage issues and whether a get should be forthcoming and other related issues, they submit to a named Beis Din. Such an agreement could be enforceable to the extent that a court could force someone who signed an arbitration agreement to appear in front of the arbiters that he agreed to appear in front of. So it does have that advantage of naming a Beis Din, directing people where to go rather than fighting over Beis Din, fighting over whether to go to Beis Din. It's not a foolproof kind of document because there's little that could be done to compel someone to appear in Beis Din if they don't follow the court directive. And if the court were to take more aggressive measures, as in putting someone in contempt of court and with the threat of incarceration or even financially penalizing someone, that would raise issues of isui, because that wasn't done based on a psak Beis Din. So the nusach that Rav Moshe endorses here is useful, but is not necessarily going to solve every problem. A kind of variation on the theme of this Rav Moshe prenup was suggested by one of the earlier RCA committees, go back to the 80s, where the suggestion was to have this kind of general arbitration agreement together with some kind of financial penalty should the husband not comply. The problem there is that such financial penalties raise the issue of knas in the context of a get, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. Whether such a penalty would be even halachically justifiable is questionable. Rav Jolty, wrote a letter to another Riverdale rabbi, Rabbi Abner Weiss, who was on the RCA committee in the early 80s, published in Apartheid, I think 1983, in which he raises these issues and points out that this kind of liquidated damage clause has halachic problems. He makes other suggestions, which potentially have other issues as well, but beyond the scope of what time will allow for this evening. Let's just take a look at the language of the Bezdin of America prenuptial agreement, which you should have in your packet. The important clause, the most important clause, oh, it's not here. No, that's from Moshe's prenup. Oh well, I guess I'll have to read it to you. One second. I'm sorry? Yeah. After the shiur, you can go to www.theprenup.org for much more information and the text. I'll just read you the paragraph, which is the crux, and then we'll dissect it and explain what the issues are. A husband-to-be acknowledges that he recites and accepts the following. I hereby now, may achshav, obligate myself to support my wife-to-be from the date that our domestic residence together shall cease, for whatever reasons, at the rate of $150 per day, calculated as of the date of her marriage, adjusted annually by the CPI, etc., in lieu of my Jewish law obligation of support, so long as the two of us remain married, according to Jewish law, even if she has another source of income or earnings. Furthermore, I waive my halachic rights to my wife's earnings for the period that she is entitled to the above stipulated sum, and I recite that I shall be deemed to have repeated this waiver at the time of our wedding. I acknowledge that I have now may actually have effected the above obligation by means of a kinyan in an esteemed chash of Bezdin as prescribed by Jewish law. So in a nutshell, what this does is institutes or creates a support obligation, a hischayvus midas, whereby the husband agrees to provide mizonos, support to his wife, at the point that their residence together ceases until a get is issued, which is an extension of the normal chiyuv mizonos that a person has to his wife. Now, if husband and wife are living together, then usually that's all part of the general marriage situation, that there's no actual sum of money which is transacted. But after the domestic joint residence ceases, then he pays the chiyuv mizonos, which is the reasonable amount of money that a person would need to support herself in a average style of living in the United States of America today, which would include rent and clothing and food and utilities and a car and insurance, etc. Okay. So the issues that are raised, that we'll address, are, number one, does this constitute some kind of a knas? This is some kind of penalty which would raise issues of isui. Number two, does this create problems of asmachta, which we'll explain in a few moments. Number three, what right do you have to institute this kind of new document that never has no precedent in the annals of the history of Klal Yisrael, as one of the people wrote in this thing publicized today, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was from the Gedolei Ador, and clearly he knew if such a thing was valid, then he would have instituted it himself. And then, does this create a situation where suddenly we can have divorce upon demand, which is not a Jewish value? So let's take these issues one by one. So as far as the question of knas, what this relates to is the status of knas atzmo, a self-imposed penalty. And we'll have to address whether this is a knas at all. If it was a knas, then this would be considered a knas atzmo. What's the status of knas atzmo, a self-imposed penalty? So take a look. Source number two, Tshuvas HaRashba, Chelek Dalet, Simen Mem. This is actually, as Rabbi Bleich points out in an early article, this is a tshuva written to the Meiri. The dateline is Pirpinion, the Provençal city where the Meiri lived, Rabbi Menachem, addressed to Rabbi Menachem HaMeiri. The question was, Reuven ba Leah, v'krove Leah hayu baskama sheigarish Reuven ze'es Leah ishta. So there was an understanding that there would be a get forthcoming. Then also zel zeh beknas elef dinarim, and they entered into a knas whereby he agreed that if he doesn't divorce his wife within a set amount of time, then he would pay $1,000. And then he had charata, and he didn't want to give the get anymore, but he felt compelled to do so on the basis of the knas that he had entered into originally. So the Rashba writes, nearly shez gam zet gen meusa upasulhu, that even a self-imposed knas, if the reason that you're giving the get now is because of that self-imposed knas, that rises to a level of isui. So says the Miri himself, presumably after the receipt of this tshuva, in his Chidushin Beis HaBechira Gittin Peches Amid Beis, where he writes on the second line, Afilu Kabbalah Me'atzmo, even if the isui is based on a agreement that he entered into willingly, Kol Shen Ischareit, once he had charata, v'kofen oso l'kayim, yisada knas, ones gamarhu. And then if we force him on the basis of that knas, that's considered ones, that would be again me'usa, which would be pasul. However, there are many Rishonim who argue, the Beis Yosef in Siman Kuf Lamed Daled quotes Remaimo Noar and others, that a knas atzmo does not constitute isui. What does the Ramah say? L'halacha Siman Kuf Lamed Daled se'if Daled. If a husband takes a shvua to give the get, and we're concerned that maybe he's giving the get on the basis of a shvua, but not rizono atov, then we should nullify the shvua. Shelo yehei dom al ones. That's the mechaber. The Ramah says, Hagam, v'hu adinim kibel kinyan legaris. Same thing, if a person accepts upon himself the kinyan to be megarish his wife, aval im kibel alen, we should be matir the Kabbalah, aval im kibel alav kenasa sim la yigarish, but if he accepts a financial penalty, should he not divorce his wife, lo mikri ones, that's not considered isui. Me'akar detalagita b'davarachar, it's something external to the get. The yuchalita in a kenosis will oligarch, and he has the option to pay the penalty and not to divorce. The yesh machmirim afila b'chaya gavna, and there are those that are machmir even in such a situation. Shuvas harashba, as we quoted, the tov lachush lechachila ulapotro min aknas. So it's preferable. Push comes to shove, the Ramah seems to say that it's not considered easily, but it's better to avoid the problem and to release him from this knas. But if he nevertheless gave a get with the looming threat of this knas atzmo, haget kosher, it was his own volition that created that obligation. Pesach Tshuva there quotes other Achronim who are machmir, that even b'di'evid we shouldn't rely on the Ramah's Kula, Mishnas Yaakov, and others. Okay. The initial basis of the Beis Din Merkav Prenuptial Agreement was a draft of a version that was drafted by Rav Nechemia Goldberg in the early late 1980s, which is published in an article written by Rabbi Tzvi Gardner, later authored a monumental sefer called Kfiya Beget, in an article in Moria 1988, where the nisuach of that version, which you, I think, do have the Mar Makomos, was that a husband obligates himself to pay a certain sum of money, the sum then was $50, every day annually for the mezonos of his wife from the moment they get married, but his wife will be mochelas achiyah so long as they're living together happily. At a point where they're no longer living together happily, then she has the right to demand that chiyah mezonos of that daily sum. The version that we have was based on a suggestion of Reb Chaim Simbalist, one of the Gedolei HaDayanim in Tel Aviv, who preferred, as a way of potentially even more strongly obviating the any chashash of knas, that it be structured not as a chiv that kicks in from the moment the marriage begins and is forgiven, but rather a chiv that only kicks in once they're no longer living happily together. And that is a hischayvus midas, that just like a person could take upon himself There are certain situations in which Shnayis and Ksubas have in which a person enters into second marriage. Sometimes he has the obligation to support the daughters of from his wife's first marriage. Sometimes he doesn't. But a person could be Mischayev Midas to issue support even where it's not obligatory, Me'ikir Hadin. So along those lines, that is the suggestion over here, a voluntary Yischayevus to enter into this arrangement to pay Mizonos, which, if it's constructed in such a way that it is a reasonable sum of money to reflect normal cost of living, would not be construed as a knas. And in fact, the language doesn't connect it directly to a get. You know, there's no quid pro quo in which there's any direct connection, even though that may be the motivation for putting this out. But there's no direct quid pro quo connecting this to a get per se. So the clock is started when she summons him to Beis Din. When they're no longer living together, and she summons him to Beis Din. So if he doesn't comply in a reasonable amount of time, then she has a right to be tovea that money. Rabbi Willig makes two points to that. Number one, there may be a case in which in a chanami, a rare case. Number two, even a millionaire doesn't want to pay money to someone that he doesn't like. Lemaisa, I don't think we've encountered any case in which that was an issue, where there was a prenup and a get wasn't issued in a timely fashion because the husband said, well, the money's nothing to me. In theory, a person could enter their own sum of money into the document. How reasonable that is could potentially raise other issues of knas. But that's why this sum of money seems to be what we presume to be a reasonable reflection of cost of living. What about the asmachta issue? So, briefly, an asmachta is a contingency arrangement that a person enters into where he doesn't reasonably believe that that contingency is going to come to fruition. So if a person pledges a sum of money without really thinking that it's ever going to come to the point where he has to give that money, that is potentially an asmachta. So would one argue that this kind of arrangement, the time the person gets married, he doesn't think that he's going to, he assumes he'll be living happily ever after forever. He doesn't, lo alo daita, that this is going to happen. So does that raise issues of asmachta? So the precedent for this kind of an arrangement is the knosos that are discussed in Shulchan Aruch in the context of a broken engagement. So in Siman Nun, in Evan Ezer, the Rama writes, V'yesh Omer, the kol knosos she'osim b'shiduchim meimim mishim asmachta, that any knos in the context of shiduchim arrangements doesn't rise to the level of asmachta, that even if one would make an agreement that if you break the shidduch, it's going to be an exorbitant amount of money, that doesn't rise to the level of asmachta. V'chein minak pashut, l'gabe knosos she'osim b'shiduchim, says the Beis Shmuel, why? Atam ishim boshes. That to break a shidduch is embarrassing. And even if the sum of money would exceed what we reasonably would assume to be compensation to the boshes, it still doesn't rise to the level of knas. Even if you don't accept that argument in this context, so we don't have time to get into the details of the various machloksim and rishonim, mechaber amos, both in Choshen Mishpat and Evan Ezer, about what would obviate an asmachta problem. But the nusach that we have references both me'achshav and Beis Din Kashya, both where the kinyan is entered into now and the kinyan is entered into in the presence of a Beis Din Kashya. And we paskin, as long as you say it's ke'ilu in front of a Beis Din Kashya, you don't need the actual Beis Din to convene, that's a nemanus issue. And anyway, you slice it, according to most, at least according to Mechaber Ramah, what should come out is if you cover both of those bases, that would obviate the problem of asmachta. Rabbi Bleich has concerns that there is a Shitas Rambam, according to whom neither of those options would work. We don't necessarily pass on like the Rambam Shulchan Aruch. And he's worried about maybe you could say Kimli, like the minority opinion in both directions. You look at his articles. But according to most everyone, And according to the Psaka Mekubal, having the Me'achsha stipulation, the Bezen Choshe stipulation, on top of other Cheshbonos, which we can't get into right now, should obviate the Asmachta problem. What about the contention that Chadashim Yikarabo, this is something that never existed before in history? So Rabbi Wulig points out that if you look in the Nachlas Shiva Siman Tes, Nachlas Shiva is the authoritative work on Shtaros, written by a Talmud of the Taz, going back a few centuries. So in the original Nusach of Tanayim that were entered into Bishas Erisin, not the watered-down version that most of us use today, where there are actual serious penalties for breaking up a Shidduch, so in the Nusach here, there is the following line, which is on the last page of the Mara Mekomo sheets. Between the Yud Gimel and Yud Dalid, V'im chas v'shalom sheyasa k'mar ploni anal l'zugasam ar plonis eiz advarim she'en yichal lispo, in a situation in which they do things they can't live together anymore, v'tzichal l'bezdin, and she needs the services of Bezdin, as tekef miyad, immediately, yitain la saras ahuvim l'pizer mizonos, he should pay her a set sum for mizonos. So this, Rabbi Willick thinks, is precedent for a chiyah mizonos to set in and be collectible at the point that a Bezdin that the services of Bezdin are necessary. V'chein yitain la kol chodesh v'chodesh meshach yimei haktat, so long as they're fighting until the resolution, he'll pay a monthly fee, etc. So you can look in Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva in support of our prenup posted on the prenup website, in which he thinks that maybe that's not Pshat L'Nachlas Shiva, Ayin Sham, but Rabbi Willick thinks that this is ample precedent for having such an arrangement made. Yeah. Okay. Another issue that has been raised, we spoke a few weeks ago about the Tzfat Get of last year, and the author of that, primary author of that opinion was Rabbi Uriel Levy of the Beis Din in Tzfat. So Rabbi Levy has two very thick volumes of Tshuas called Ateres Devar, I think, and he has a long piece in there which was originally printed in Shuas Hadin, which is the journal of the Batei Din Rabbanim, in which he discusses not our prenup, but another prenup, the Haskem L'Chvod Hadadi, which is pushed by some in Israel, which potentially has some issues that ours doesn't. But there he raises an issue which was quoted in some of the most recent literature as well, that this is contributing to a breakdown in traditional values, because we don't believe in divorce by demand. The fact that a woman says she wants a divorce doesn't entitle her to a divorce until Bezdin hears what the issues are. And maybe she's not entitled. So here we're getting a situation where a woman has the right to be Tovas Mizonos as long as she wants out. So that may be true, but it may also be the lesser of all evils, meaning we live in a society where that's happening anyway. So that could happen with a get or could happen without a get, and we don't really have the ability to compel people who don't want to remain together to remain together. The other issue that has been raised by some is the social message, that why should we be discussing matters of divorce at such a happy time as when you're getting married? So at one level we have a ksuba. So ksuba also isn't such a pleasant document. Some people even hang it on their wall. I don't know. I haven't seen too many people hang their prenuptial agreements on the wall, but it's essentially related. So some say the ksuba is in Aramaic, so people don't really understand what it means. They should understand what it means. So Rabbi Willick said you should have maybe write the prenup in Aramaic. But Lemaisa, I'm sorry? Exactly. That's another thing, the question has been raised. So the person doesn't understand what he's getting into. Well, it says that I understand what I'm getting into, and I've either sought legal counsel or I've waived the right to legal counsel, and we generally assume in halacha that a person can claim that he doesn't know what he got into There was one case in which there was such a claim. It was held up a little bit in the courts. But generally speaking, we assume in halacha that if a person signs a document, he's presumed to have read and understood that which he's signing. When you sign a ksuba, you should understand what you're signing. When you sign any legal document, you should understand what you're signing. So a couple of things. So first of all, the kinyan is effective me'achshav. I think you may be addressing that as not the issue as well. There is the nusach, and this is because of a detail that is not the topic of our discussion today, but if you're interested, there's another shiur of mine on Why You Torah that addresses this more directly. The nusach of our agreement, which is here somewhere. Yes. It says, I shall be deemed to have repeated this waiver at the time of her wedding. There's a certain ischaivios that could only be entered into, perhaps, nikra din bein erisin vin asuin, as relevant more to financial prenuptial agreements where certain mechilas could only be entered into, possibly, ayin suvis pei gimel, bein erisin lin asuin. So to account for that, if that's necessary, we have that lashon that I'm deemed to have repeated this waiver at the time of our wedding. So that would account for that concern as well. So these are some of the issues. But again, you can look the various haskamas of gedolim that are posted on the website that we mentioned earlier. I'm sorry. So he thinks that it's a knas atzmo. He thinks that it's and we machmir knas atzmo that it would create a get musa. He writes that it's an unreasonable sum of money, which maybe Meisharim or Harnov is it's an unreasonable sum of money, but it seems to be consistent with cost of living in America. And then he has a line in there which isn't reflective of reality, which is that, well, maybe the courts can put the guy in jail for not appearing in front of Essen, which is not true. So those are the main issues. And now, one could theoretically argue that this is a knas atzmo, but the way it's constructed, and based on the presentation we made, General Mahalach HaMukhuvar, endorsed by many, is that it's not considered a knas at all.